Yankee fans, I just have one question to ask. Can it get any worse? We have a lot to talk about. Let's just get it started here on the latest episode of the Pinstripe Talk podcast, which begins right now.
You are listening to the Pinstripe Talk podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Pinstripe Talk podcast, powered to you by Delahanty Media. I'm your host, Nick Delahanty, and like I said in our little opener, it has been ugly to be a Yankee fan over the past couple of weeks. It hasn't been a lot of fun, but we have a lot to talk about on this episode. Today, we are going to break down the MLB trade deadline, and I say Major League Baseball trade deadline because the Yankees did squat at the deadline. We're going to break that down for you. We're also going to look into the Tampa series. There was a lot that went on in that series. Some bad blood between the two teams in their final matchup of the year. And we'll also look at the terrible, and I mean terrible, one-game series against the Mets at Citi Field. There's a lot to talk about today, and we're going to get right into it. But before we do that, reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at PinstripeTalkND, my personal account at Nick_Delahanty. Search us up on Facebook by looking up Pinstripe Talk Podcast. Again, Delahanty Media is live on social media as well. We have a Facebook account. We have an Instagram account. Just search Delahanty Media and you'll be able to find it. And as always, check out our official website, www.delahantymedia.com. Everything you need to know about our brand is there for you. And our podcast, as you already know, is available on all podcasting platforms. The big ones, Apple Podcasts, subscribe, rate, and review the show on there. And then we're also on Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, you name it, the show is there available for you to listen. So make sure you stream it on whatever platform you decide. And make sure you subscribe. And if you can, rate and review our show. It definitely goes a long way in helping grow our brand and our podcast. Now, before we get into the Tampa series and the one-game Met series, the Major League Baseball trade deadline came and passed. And the New York Yankees decided that it was the right idea to stand pat. And we've heard the rumors over the past couple of weeks. Mike Clevinger, Starling Marte, Archie Bradley, even Robbie Ray. You name it, it seemed like the Yankees were in on a lot of players. And you know, one thing to remember is the rumor mill always isn't correct. Like, yeah, you hear these big-name reporters saying they're in on players, and you have to believe that they're in at some extent, but it doesn't always necessarily mean that a trade is going to come into fruition. And let's remember, it's a weird year. Anybody could be traded, but if you're not on the 60-man roster, and I have to correct myself because I was wrong about this, if you're not on the 60-man summer camp roster or whatnot, you have to be named as a player to be named later to be part of the deal, and it has to be completed within 6 months of the transaction. So we saw a lot of things happen at the trade deadline, and for the first time in a very long time, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, the marquee names were not the ones that were buyers. And I think that Brian Cashman stood pat for one of multiple reasons. Number one, we know how much he loves to say that the guys who are injured are like trade acquisitions. And yeah, that's definitely the case if they come back healthy. You know, you get a Gleyber Torres back, that he's a boost. You maybe an Aaron Judge later on in the year. Giancarlo Stanton, who appears weeks away, who knows if you'll even see him. And let's not forget, you really think that teams are going to hand over their top talent to the Yankees, especially given the talent and the depth that the Yankees have? You got to be kidding if you think that the Yankees are going to get a bargain. And when you look at the Mike Clevinger trade, he goes to the Padres and they gave up a lot for him. The reports circulated that the Yankees would have had to give up two of the following three players to start the trade. They would have had to give up Davey Garcia, Clark Schmidt, and or Clint Frazier. So when you sit down and look at it, are you really willing to give up two of those three guys for a guy like Clevinger? And yes, Clevinger's a really good pitcher. He's an ace type of pitcher. He would have fit nicely in the Yankees rotation. But I don't know if that's the right answer. You know, only time's going to tell. And I keep saying this to everybody I talk to because I firmly believe it. We won't know if the Yankees did well in standing pat until we see Garcia over the long haul, until we see Clark Schmidt over the long haul. Yeah, Frazier's been really good, but what's their plan for him? In the past years, it's funny, but Frazier was a guy that you felt like the Yankees wanted to trade him, like he really didn't have a place on this team. But all of a sudden, Stanton's down, Judge is down, Gardner's having a terrible year, Aaron Hicks isn't what they thought Aaron Hicks was going to be, Mike Tauchman came back to earth, and all of a sudden, Clint Frazier's your best outfielder, and he's indispensable. So a lot of things go into consideration here. I would have loved to have seen the Yankees get another reliever. I think the loss of Tommy Canley has really hurt them, and you're going to see when we talk about the recap of the next two series, which were Tampa and the Mets, that the bullpen really didn't do them any favors. And it's a frustrating thing because obviously, when healthy, you expect this team to be loaded and a World Series contender. But they're on the brink of not even making the playoffs. That's scary to me. They won 16 of their first 22 games. And a lot of those games were against the Red Sox. And we all thought, man, this team is rolling. They look really good. Then the injury bug starts. And then you see guys like Jordy Mercer, Tyler Wade, Thairo Estrada getting everyday at-bats. Eric Kratz, no offense to him, but he wasn't even on the roster to begin the year. And then the Yankees lose 10 of 14. This is the first time they've done that since June 15th to the 29th in 2017. So there's a lot to digest, a lot of struggles, and it's been very frustrating to watch because it just seems like this team doesn't have much life. Where a trade at the trade deadline might have gave them a little spark or a little extra boost. And you know what? If Cashman felt that the price on the market was too much, I'm actually happy that he didn't overpay for rentals. Because why are you going to mortgage your future for a guy you might only have for a month? Let's remember, this is a lot different than normal years. In normal years, you have situations where you can control these guys for 2 to 3 months and then possibly re-sign them. You're only getting a rental for a guaranteed 30 days. That's essentially what it came down to. So I don't know if I would mortgage my future for 30 days and then whatever you are in the postseason. It could be 3 games. It could be 2 games. It could be a trip to the World Series. You never know. But what the deadline told me was, number one, the market wasn't there because I think Cashman would have pulled the trigger if there was something there that he liked where the Yankees were getting a good deal out of it. That's number one. Number two, I think Cashman's okay with where the Yankees roster is. Obviously, the starting pitching's not where it's been, and you have to figure the bullpen's going to get better. But if they get healthy, they really don't need to make that many moves. They're a team that definitely can compete. So while we wrap up the trade deadline talk, yeah, it's frustrating Cashman didn't get anything done. I think that there's a lot of heat on him and Aaron Boone, especially because of how things have gone recently. But the only way we're going to find out is over time. You know, the Padres were the winners of the trade deadline. They could lose in the first round of the playoffs. You don't know. It's not a guarantee. So, you know, I can't really blame the front office here. Was I disappointed? Absolutely. Was I frustrated? Yeah, I thought they could have added a piece here or there. But I have to trust in what they're doing and just see how it goes. It could be a total fail. But we won't know that until the season continues to roll on and we see how this Yankee team bounces back, especially if they're able to get a little bit more healthy. You see guys like Britton coming back. You see possible Gleyber Torres return in the near future. So there are signs that they're getting healthy, but now you're going to need production from guys like Gary Sanchez, guys like Brett Gardner. You can't have those guys hitting under 200. Like I said earlier, you're giving every day at bats to Tyler Wade. The guy can't hit a lick. So you're essentially relying on guys like them and add into the mix Mike Tauchman, who was really good last year and really good at the beginning of the year and has really fallen off. And you have two or three guys that are really producing right now, and that's not a recipe for success. But we're going to talk about the two series the Yankees played as well on this podcast because there's a lot to break down, especially in regards to the 3-game set against the Tampa Rays to end the team's 10-game set over the 2020 season. Now, heading into this series, I said the Yankees had to win at least 2 of 3, and here's why. Number one, you have Gerrit Cole on the mound for one of the games, and you have Tanaka on the mound for another. There's no reason why you can't win both of those games. Number two, the way that Tampa has dominated the Yankees so far this year, the Yankees needed to set a statement because what's going to happen if these two match up in the postseason? All the confidence in the world is going to go to that Rays team that knows that they took care of the Yankees this year. There's just so much that you can digest from this, and I thought that at least winning 2 of 3 kind of resets the tone here and shows the Rays, look, we beat you and we're not even full staffed. But things didn't happen well for the Yankees, and the series didn't go in their favor. Let's start off with game one. Gerrit Cole on the mound, like I mentioned, he did not have it. Went five innings, allowed four runs, allowed up two home runs. Really wasn't typical Gerrit Cole. The Yankees struggled offensively. They got their runs all from home runs. Urshela hit a home run in the seventh. Voit hit a homer in the eighth. They go on to lose 5-3. Tyler Glass now looked like Cy Young once again. Yankees can't hit with runners in scoring position. They were 0-4 in this game, but it's a common trend for them. The only one with more than one hit in the ballgame was LeMahieu. He had two. And then the Yankees mustered seven hits but couldn't get anything in the run column. That's your ball game for game one. And when Cole's on the mound, and I say it all the time, we all think he's superhuman, that he's indestructible. But if you look at his numbers from 2019, his first eight or nine starts were very similar to where he is now. The only difference is, and the only problem for the Yankees is, last year, his eighth or ninth start came somewhere in June, or maybe even earlier. I don't know the exact date. Now you're looking at it, and we're in September because of the shortened season. So there is time for Cole to bounce back. I'm not worried about him, but I would like to see, and just hear me out here. I know that Cole has been hyping up Gary Sanchez, and I understand that he's really been working with him in order to get Gary to be better behind the plate, and Gary's been doing a good job for him. But I would love, I mean love, to see an Eric Kratz or a Kyle Higashioka catch Cole and see how he does. I think it's the catching. I really do. Because I don't know. You look at what Cole's doing, and teams are going to hunt fastballs. Obviously, when you have a dominant pitcher, they're going to try to hit fastballs as far as they can. And in Yankee Stadium, you get away with that a lot more often because of the small ballpark. But I would just like to see it and see how Cole does with somebody else behind the plate. It's worth looking at. You know, I have nothing against Sanchez, but when he's not hitting, he's basically useless. But if I'm the Yankees, I try to give Cole a start where somebody other than Sanchez is behind the plate and see how it goes. You know, it could work, it could not work. But again, it doesn't hurt to try, especially the way Cole's been struggling as of late. He hasn't been the dominant Gerrit Cole that we've grown to know, so it doesn't hurt to really take a look into this. And again, game one is a tough way to go down in the series, obviously, because now you're pressured to win both the second and third game of the series to kind of salvage what was a very disappointing 10-game series against the Rays this year. But now we head to game two, and here's where all the fireworks happen. It was rather entertaining, to say the least, but let's start off with the logistics of it. In the first inning, Masahiro Tanaka hits Joey Wendell. And I didn't think it was intentional. First of all, I don't think Tanaka would hurt a fly. But you do watch in the sequence that Tanaka throws an inside fastball toward the knees. But then the next pitch, in a very similar spot, hits Wendell. So that's where it starts. And nobody really thought anything of it at that rate. The Yankees end up taking the lead right away in the bottom half of the first inning. LeMahieu hits a homer. They go up 2-0 in the bottom half of the third by who else? DJ LeMahieu hits another homer. So now they're up 2-0. You're feeling good about yourself. You're feeling good that DJ is in the groove. Hold up. Top of the fifth, Kiermaier hits a homer to tie the game. Yankees retake the lead in the bottom half of the sixth inning. Urshela hits a little league home run. He hits a double to deep right center field. Frazier and Voit score, but due to an error, Urshela was able to slide him. It was such a great slide at home plate to avoid the tag, and he ends up scoring. So I call it a little league homer. The official ruling is double and an error, but it is what it is. Yankees take a 5-2 lead, a lead they would not relish. Adames comes up, hits a home run in the seventh off Jonathan Loaisiga, but that is it for your ballgame. Before we get into the fireworks of the ninth inning, time to look at some notables. Tanaka looked good again. Six innings, allowed two runs, struck out seven. Loaisiga came in, allowed a run, but then Britton and Chapman held it down for the Bronx Bombers' win. But we did have fireworks in the ninth inning. Aroldis Chapman, as we all know, is a little wild. He throws up and into a couple of batters, doesn't sit right with the Rays, especially given that Wendell got hit in the first inning. He almost hits Mike Brissot with a 101-mile-per-hour fastball near the head. The Yankees end up winning the ballgame, like I mentioned, but the fireworks continued afterward. The Yankees dugout chirping toward the Rays, and the benches cleared, the bullpen's cleared, everybody was on the field. Kevin Cash got ejected. It was a mess. After the game, Cash made some really questionable comments. And again, I ripped Kevin Cash on social media because there is a time and place where you make comments and you speak out of frustration. I understand that we're all human. But in that type of situation, and I know it was only a couple of minutes after the incident, you know, you got to control your emotions. You can't go out and threaten people and say, oh, we have a stable of guys who throw 98 miles per hour. First of all, they're not horses. They're human beings. So stop treating them like animals. Number two, that's just not the way to handle it. And was Chapman right? No. Do I think it was intentional? The way he walked toward him, the way he didn't talk to the media afterward, it just has that inclination of it being intentional. And you know what? The Yankees took offense to the Rays throwing up and in. A couple of times to LeMahieu, you can look at the tape. And if you look at the numbers, the Yankees actually hit more Rays than the Rays hit the Yankees. The Rays just pitch up and in more effectively where they don't hit guys. And it's frustrating, but, you know, from the first inning when Tanaka hit Wendell to what Chapman did in the ninth, it had to set the Rays off and really tick them off, as now you're looking into game three of the series. But there are precautions for your actions. Chapman gets 3-game suspension. He will appeal it. Aaron Boone, which I didn't agree with, he got suspended, but if they deem it intentional, they say it's on the manager, so he gets a game. He sat out the final game of this series. And Kevin Cash, who I thought deserved a couple more games, I would have gave him a 3-game suspension. He gets one. And let me just clear the air here, okay? Number one, I think Kevin Cash is a great manager. Was he wrong in what he did? Absolutely. Was he defending his guys? Oh, without a doubt. And you like to see that. But the way he handled it was wrong. So you move into game three, and here's where you're hoping that the Yankees come out, and this fires them up. This sets a new tone for them. This helps dictate a change or a turning point in their season. But what happens? The Yankees starting pitching fails them again. Jordan Montgomery doesn't even get out of the first inning, allows 4 runs on 5 hits, walks a batter through 39 pitches. And the sad thing is, other than Holder during his inning and a third of work, the rest of the Yankees bullpen did a really good job. It's important to note that Ben Heller, after 3 pitches, got ejected. He hit a batter. It wasn't intentional. You could see he was frustrated with it. And the umpires, I don't know what they were watching, but I guess they were taking it as a precaution throughout Heller, and I understand why, but if you look at it, you look at his reaction, it definitely wasn't intentional. I thought it was a little bit too much there. But for the Rays pitching was great. Morton comes off the injury list. He threw 2 innings. He didn't allow a run. The Yankees' runs came off a Clint Frazier homer in the bottom of the 6th and a DJ LeMahieu single in the 9th. It was a little, too late. The key name in this game, Mike Brousseau, after having that scare against Aroldis Chapman, he comes out and hits 2 homers for the Rays. And right now, you just have to chalk it up and say the Rays are a better team than this New York Yankees roster. They just are. This team does not hit with runners in scoring position. They do not do the little things to win ball games. They look lackadaisical, like a playoff spot's going to be handed to them. But I'm sorry to tell them, it's not going to be handed to them. It's very frustrating to watch. And in a series that gave the Bronx Bombers so much ammunition and motivation to win it, they came out flat. And after that predicament with Chapman in the 9th, you just thought they were going to come out and give you a better performance in Game 3. But it did not happen. Yankees lose the series. They end up losing 8 out of 10 to their in-division rival. Looks like Tampa's going to win the division. Good for them. They've been playing some lights-out baseball. Even with all their injuries, they don't seem to miss a beat. Now, before we get into the Mets game on Thursday, this is a makeup from the series that was postponed due to the Mets having a few COVID cases. It's important to note that Tom Seaver, the legendary Tom Seaver, passed away. We send our condolences to the Mets organization and his family, one of the greatest pitchers of all time. And it's just sad 2020 keeps taking so many great members of our world away from us. And the Mets did a really nice tribute before the game. As you probably know, Seaver was known to have dirt or whatnot on his knee, and it was a sign that he was pitching well because he was following through or whatnot. But all the Mets had a smudge on their knee in honor of Seaver, and I thought it was a really nice touch. Now, this game couldn't have started off any better for the Yankees. They get a 4-1 after 2 innings of play. Let's take you through it. Wade singles with the bases loaded, puts him up 1-0. A sac fly from LeMahieu and a double from Voit gives him a 4-0 lead over Robert Gsellman. But Jay Happ is still Jay Happ. Todd Frazier, who the Mets acquired at the trade deadline, you remember he was there for a stint in the past. He rejoins the Mets, hits a homer against his former team in the Yankees as well. And then the bottom of the fourth, Mets tie the game. A Mariznick double, a Rosario infield single, a McNeil single. And now all of a sudden, it's 4-4. The game becomes kind of silent until the seventh inning. The Yankees get back on the board. Urshela single and a Gardner double puts them up 6-4. And you're hoping they can hold on to that lead. They had another run in the eighth on a Aaron Hicks a single. And they're heading into the bottom of the eighth up 7-4. And in that predicament that we talk about oh so much, the Yankees get the ball to their key guys in the bullpen. After Ottavino comes in and Green comes in, you're handing the ball to Zach Britton and you're hoping that Britton could get the job done. Well, he couldn't. He allows two runs. The Yankees are up 7-6 going into the ninth inning. And like we mentioned before, Aroldis Chapman, who was the center point of the issue with the Tampa Bay Rays, he struggles as well. He lets up a run in the bottom half of the ninth, and we are going into extras. Wow, this is a lot of fun, guys. We love when Davis hits a home run off Chapman and he smiles on the mound. It's so much fun to watch how these guys don't care about winning and losing. It's amazing. We go into the 10th. Yankees get doubled up on a bonehead mistake by Tyler Wade. I can't say it enough. I don't want to see this guy play every day anymore. It's making me sick. Glaber, where are you? I need you back in my life. But anyway, go to the bottom half of the 10th. Abreu comes on. Abreu lets up a home run to Alonso, and the Mets win. The Mets win. Meet the Mets. Greet the Mets. The Yankees, after holding a 4-0 lead, cannot relish it again and again blow a lead that they held with their key bullpen guys on the mound. Listen, I've said it before and I'll say it again. If Luis Sessa blows a game, I expect that. If the lower guys in the bullpen blow a game, you can anticipate it. But when Britton and Chapman and Green and Ottavino keep dishing out leads and you're paying these guys a ton of money, it's frustrating. It's a very frustrating scenario and you just can't get past it. Now, where I'm sitting from, and I'm sick and tired of Aaron Boone. I want this guy gone. I'm sick of him. I don't blame him for the injuries, but I blame him for this team's lack of motivation. A good manager gets his team playing regardless of who's on the field. Boone don't have that. And I'm tired of the positivity after the game. Well, you know, no. Your team lost 10 of 14, buddy. You're stinking up the joint. Let's figure something out. Why are your top bullpen guys not performing? Why do you have three guys in your lineup that are not hitting well, that are not doing their job? Mike Ford hitting 169. Gardner hitting 177. Wade hitting 167. These guys are getting every day at bats. Hicks hitting 216. It's embarrassing. It is flat out embarrassing. And for the Yankees, I don't know what they need for this team to wake up. I get Judge being out hurts. I get Glaber being out hurts. But you're a team that won 103 games last year and dealt with a lot more injuries than you have now. Like, figure it out. And I'm sick of Jay Happ, too. You know, he had a great start, and I gave him praise for his start against the Mets a couple days ago, actually 5 days out. But he stinks, too. I don't blame the Yankees for playing with his vesting option because he doesn't deserve that money. Get rid of him, restart, and refresh. And like you can see from the way I'm talking now, it's a frustrating time to be a Yankee fan. It really is. 10 of 14. This team had World Series aspirations. They might not even make the playoffs. They're tied for second place in the division. In the division. Come on. I don't know what it is, but recently, and I don't know if you guys agree with me, so hit me up on Twitter and let me know, but I don't enjoy watching this team. They make me sick. They really do. I can't watch them. I love LeMahieu. I love Voit. But I can't watch these guys play on an everyday basis. They just don't do it for me. I can't watch Sanchez try to hit a ball 450 feet when he can't even hit the ball in play. I can't watch Tyler Wade be an automatic out at the bottom of the lineup. I can't watch Aaron Hicks in the middle of the Yankees lineup, and he's lackadaisical. Gardner, it's time for him to go too. It's frustrating, and you hope that this team makes the playoffs. They have a 98% chance of making the playoffs, so I don't know how, but they do.
But the way they're looking right now, they're one and done. They're not going far in the postseason. No starting pitching other than partially Cole and Tanaka partially. The bullpen's been terrible, and the offense is all banged up. That's a recipe for a disaster if you're asking me. There's a lot of frustrating things going on, and as they head to Baltimore for this weekend series over Labor Day, you hope that things somewhat change as we move ahead. Now, let's take a look at this series for you. The Yankees will play that doubleheader starting on Friday afternoon. Davey Garcia gets the ball in his second big league start. He'll be opposed by Alex Cobb. In the nightcap, Jorge Lopez takes the mound for the Orioles. The Yankees are to be determined. Expect some kind of bullpen game there. Then on Saturday, Gerrit Cole looks to get back on track. That's a 7:35 start. He'll go up against Keegan Aiken. And I know I normally say that Cole starts are definite wins or automatic wins, but right now I don't want to make any predictions. And then on Sunday, the Yankees wrap up the series against the Orioles. It'll be a four-game set, obviously, because of the doubleheader. That's a 1 o'clock start. Masahiro Tanaka takes the ball for the Bronx Bombers. And over the last month of the season, the Yankees play, I believe it's 18 of their final 25 contests against the Blue Jays and the Orioles. So the Yankees are going to make or not make the postseason based on what they do against those two teams. But let me tell you, I don't know what to think of this team. And this team has a lot to prove to me if they really think that they could be a deep postseason run team in 2020. I don't know, guys. I'm frustrated. Let me know what you guys think. Hit me up on Twitter at PinstripeTalkND, my personal account at Nick_Delahanty. I know I'm always so positive about the Bronx Bombers, but right now there's a lot of room for doubt, and it's just frustrating. I don't even know the answer at this rate. But that's going to wrap up today's show. As always, like I said, find us on social media. Go to our website, DelahantyMedia.com. Find all the latest news and updates regarding the Delahanty Media brand. And as you guys already know, our podcast is available on all podcasting platforms. Apple Podcast, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, you name it, our show is there available for you. We'll be back next week to recap the Orioles series. We'll look at the Toronto Blue Jays series as well. And as always, there's a lot of Yankees baseball to talk about. But for the time being, stay patient, Yankee fans. I know it's tough, but we're going to get through it together. Don't lose hope. There's still a lot of baseball left to be played, and all we can hope for is that this team wakes up. Keep wearing those pinstripes. Keep chanting Let's Go Yankees from home, and we'll talk to you very soon here on the Pinstripe Talk Podcast, powered by Delahanty Media.